Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here. I'm going to talk about a little bit about prophecy today, something we haven't touched on, or I haven't, for a while. But, you know, in light of all the events that are currently taking place in the United States, as well as the rest of the world, I think it's important that we take some time and we review some of the prophecies so we can get a feel for maybe where we're at and what things that are taking place today in the world. Now, I'm going to base much of what I cover on the assumption that we all agree that the United States of America is modern Israel, the tribe of Manasseh. I've heard arguments on both sides that possibly the United States could be Ephraim, and I've heard some valid arguments along those lines, and certainly a lot argue again that we're Manasseh of the tribes of Joseph. But I would, looking at things in view of the deteriorating situation of both the United States and Great Britain, I believe the prophecies that we look at today would be applicable to either one. So it really wouldn't make any difference. In any event, the words that the Lord spoke to ancient Israel will certainly apply to us as well today. What I'd like to begin, I'd like to turn to the book of Deuteronomy. Very familiar scriptures, Deuteronomy 28. By the way, I might mention, in lieu of the fact that a couple Supreme Court decisions made this week, I think that certainly fits into what we're looking at. But I'd like to begin in Deuteronomy 28. And the first part of Deuteronomy 28 talks about all the blessings that will come upon Israel. But it says if. And notice that word if, because it always denotes a condition that has to be met prior to what happens next. So it said, as far as Israel, if they would obey God and keep His commandments, they would be blessed. When we come to verse 15, and I'm going to be brief, hopefully, in Deuteronomy 28, but in verse 15, then we see it says, "And it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken to the voice of the Lord your God, to observe and do all His commandments and His statutes, which I command you today." Now notice here. Notice here what's going to happen, and understand that God always keeps His word. And He says, all these curses shall come upon you and shall overtake you. Now, they're pretty frightening words. When we look at a nation and we look at a world that is not observing what God has asked them to do. I'd like to start by just take a look at the situation in some of our cities today. You know, Detroit is a prime example because it is one that has recently filed for bankruptcy. Now, when I go back to my childhood, and I remember Detroit being in one of the top five cities, both industrially as well as, you know, population and everything in the United States of America. And it's in terrible shape today. But, you know, they're not alone. Many of our U.S. cities are at or near the point of bankruptcy. Now, a lot of that is by these cities, by creating an overextended long-term liabilities to the government employees, these cities are facing downgraded credit ratings to junk status in order to provide the benefits and the freebies to their population. Now, obviously, unions pay a large part in this, the excessive spending, which, rightfully so, they're standing up for their people. But the people want free housing. They want free electric. They want free water, free food, free clothing, free cell phones. There's no such thing as free. There's no such thing as free. Somebody pays for these things. Now, what happens when all of these bills come due and the funds are not available? This is what happened in Detroit. There'll be a lot of unhappy people. But that's not all. Look at the exploding crime rate in many of the major cities like Baltimore. These things that have just been taking place in Baltimore recently. By the way, that was my place of birth. A pretty sad situation. But we could look at Chicago, Memphis, Oakland, St. Louis. We could go through a number of them. It seems that murders are an everyday event. And the government is clamoring to ensure that only the police and those under government control have these guns, whatever your side on that gun issue is. But many of those same government people have bodyguards to ensure their own safety. It's something to think about. Now, we could go through so many of these cursings, but let's just take a look at a few other factors that are affecting this nation today. Because we have opened up free trade with much of the world without tariffs, we continue to sustain an unfavorable trade balance to most of the world. Now, I recently have just given the president pretty much open ability to conduct free trade. But these other countries, when you think about it, they are not burdened with the unions and OSHA and EPA and other government regulations, and they can afford, amazing, but they can afford to ship their goods thousands and thousands of miles and to the consumer cheaper than something made in the United States of America. That's just a fact. Now, our negative trade balance, and we have a negative trade balance, with China alone has been in the trillions of dollars over the last couple decades. Trillions of dollars. That is money leaving our country, and it does not come back. In other words, we're buying more goods from other countries than they buy of us, which ships our dollars overseas. But China uses this money not only to improve their infrastructure and their military, which they are doing, but they also buy alliances with many of America's enemies. Now notice, just since we're in Deuteronomy 28, notice verse 44. And it's speaking of the stranger. And it says, he shall loan to you, and you shall not loan to him. Is this not the case? Is this not what we're facing today? We mentioned the economic situation of the cities, but federal spending is also out of control. I'm wondering if the United States isn't facing the same thing that we face in Detroit because of the same type of policies. In 1950, government spending was 23% of the gross domestic product, 23%. Or in those dollars of those days, that was about $300 billion. But by 2014, it was 36% of the GDP, gross domestic product, accounting for $17.3 trillion. Well, I hate to say it, but we're going broke. We're going broke. And who's paying for it? Who is paying for it? Interesting statistics there. Only 53% of the people, 53% of the population paid federal income tax. And the top 25% of those paid 90% of all the income tax. 90%. And as a result, many of the wealthy are leaving the country, and they're even denying their citizenship. We looked at a big article on Baltimore, Detroit, and some of the other cities talking about this, what took place in these. And when you overtax, you overdrive people, they tend to leave. They pack up and leave. That's what happened to Detroit. I think they lost 63% of their population when all these things started to collapse. I ran into an interesting book, and I'm just going to bring it up briefly, that my wife actually gave it to me the other day, so I haven't read it through. But America 2020 by Porter Stansberry, and it's one forwarded by Dr. Ron Paul. You've probably seen him on TV with this. I'm not going to go into the book on much, but I did want to comment on one comment he made in the introduction that I found very interesting. Quoting him here in the introduction, it says, "It seems like everyone in our country has lost his moral bearing, from the highest government official and senior corporate leaders all the way down to school teachers and local community leaders. The ethos of my fellow Americans seem to have changed from one of personal integrity and responsibility to getting yours. The all-out attempt by any means possible to get the most amount of benefits with the least amount of work possible." Just interesting. I just happened to spot that the other day. In the year 2000, every household in America... Now, we're talking household. We're talking accumulation of total debt And by the way, we look at $18 trillion debt that our country's in. The real figure when you look at country debt is all the accumulated debt, corporate debt, individual debt. And when you look at it's about $60 trillion, I believe, is the figure they come up with. But in the year 2000, basically every household in America owed $370,000. That's your debt. You know, we're all responsible for America's debt. By the year 2015, each household now owes $729,000. And that's all part of the national debt. Do you think about it, do you think that would buy you a fairly nice home? But you know, these are only some of the curses that we look at in our nation. Other curses we look at in headline news just over months and months and months. 8,000 birds die in New York. How about the 33 million birds with the avian flu in the 16 states? That's been in the news recently. Still killing millions and millions of these chickens. And what do you think that does for the price of eggs? What about half of all the bee colonies that are vanishing? This is all news. It's all in the news. How about the dolphins dying in Southern California? What about the drought in the West, just the drought in the West alone, and the flooding in Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas with the accompanying tornadoes? Now, we've always had some of these, but do they appear to be on the increase? Could any of these curses be the result, and I bring this up, of not keeping God's commandments, as he mentioned in Deuteronomy 28 and the statutes? Could it be associated with the gay rights movement? How about the Boy Scouts now appointing gay leaders? Now, you know, it's not my job to condemn all these people for what choices they make. That's God, and God makes it clear. He wants you to abide by his commandments. But on top of that, consider how many of our new movies and video games that are associated with the occult, witchcraft, and demons. They're on the increase. A lot of new movies coming out. Well, let me just say the United States is indeed in trouble, and the rest of the world doesn't look much better when you consider ISIS, beheading of Christians, killing of Christians, the Russian aggression that's taking place in the Ukraine right now. You don't think that doesn't have your concerned? And all the wars in the Middle East. And let's not leave out the term nuclear proliferation. You know, the president's still trying to conclude a treaty with Iran, even though he swears they're not going to let them come in and inspect the military facilities or any of those kind of things. But when we take a look at nuclear weapons, if they get nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia has already actually been negotiating with Pakistan to buy nuclear weapons. They said they're not going to let just Iran have nuclear weapons. And how long before Egypt and many of the others follow suit? Now, with all this said and done, are we near the end of this age? Now, the key to many prophecies, including Revelation, is the book of Daniel. So I'm going to actually begin there. So let's turn to the book of Daniel, and let's turn to chapter 2. You know, when we look at chapter 2, it's a basic chapter to understand. It's kind of the ABC chapter of study for prophecies. And it's a basic chapter to understand God's prophetic plan through all the centuries of the captivities that took place all the way to the kingdom of God. Now, some basic facts about the book of Daniel. I'm just going to breeze them. Time will not permit to go through all the things on Daniel. But Daniel and his three friends were held captive in Babylon. They were part of that were taken in captivity. Nebuchadnezzar the king had a prophetic dream. I'm sure most of us have read most of these things. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "The command for me is certain. If you will not make," this is verse 5, by the way, "if you will not make known to me my dream with its meaning, you will be cut in pieces and your house shall be made a dunghill." Interesting. I'd like to go to somebody and say, "I had a dream, but I don't remember it, and you'll either tell me or you're going to die." Take your pick. But they either told him the dream or they were going to die. And finally, the last thing about the book of Daniel, chapter 2, facing death, Daniel and his friends went to prayer. They went to prayer because they knew where to turn in a crisis rather than subject themselves to a panic. Now, beginning in verse 19, we see Daniel. We see Daniel's information concerning the kingdom of earth when he says in verse 19, "Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And Daniel answered, and he said, 'Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his.'" Verse 21, "And he changes the times and the seasons, and he removes kings and he sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding." Verse 22, "He reveals the deep and secret things, and he knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells within him." Now notice there that Daniel does not fail to give thanks to God for this life-saving information that was given to him. Notice verse 23. "I thank you and I praise you, O God of my father, who has given me wisdom and might and have now made known to me what we desire of you, or you have made known to us this king's, the king's matter." Now in verse 24 through 30, I'm not going to go through it all. As I said, time won't permit. But in verses 24 through 30, Daniel testifies to Nebuchadnezzar. And notice in verse 27. Daniel answered before the king, and he said, "The secret which the king has demanded cannot be shown to the king by the wise men, the enchanters, the astrologers, or the magicians." And look at how many people today put their trust in these things in our own nation. But then in verse 28, Daniel tells the king where this wisdom comes from when he says, "But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he makes known to King Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days." And by the way, if you were to go to Genesis 40 and verse 8, Joseph made it clear that God is the one that interprets the dreams. And notice that all these prophecies are concerned with the latter days. Now in verse 32 and 33, he finally gets into describing this image. And he said, "This image's head was of fine gold. His breast and his arms were of silver. His belly and his thighs were of bronze. And his legs were of iron. And his feet were part of iron and part of clay." Then in verses 36 through 45, Daniel gives God's interpretation of the king's dream. He gives this interpretation. And pretty much accepted. I'm not going to read all the verses. But what we find here is the head of gold is Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom. The breast and arms of silver were the Medo-Persian Empire. The belly and the thighs of brass were the Grecian Empire. The legs of iron and clay were the Roman Empire. The feet of iron and clay were the Roman Empire's final form. The stone that fell on the iron and the clay were Christ and establishment of his kingdom. Now, notice in verse 44. Notice verse 44. "And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break into pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." These are things that are certain to happen. Do we have dates and times? We're not going to get into that. But the European Union certainly appears to be a revival of the Roman Empire. Now, with a little caveat on that, certainly militarily weak at this point. They are not that powerful militarily. They've relied on the United States of America almost their entire time they formed the European Union. But rest assured, this could change as we begin to see this current Russian aggression that's taken place, because it's a big threat to Europe. And add to that the weakening of the United States as a world leader. We're walking away from the world as the leader of the world. Now, these are events that we need to be watching. Now, I'm going to move down to Daniel 7. Let's turn over to Daniel 7. To complete the picture of these prophecies and their correlation to the book of Revelation. And Daniel is the key to open the door to understanding the book of Revelation. Now, in chapter 2 of Daniel, we saw how Daniel interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and God gave him that interpretation. What we find here in chapter 7 of Daniel is actually Daniel has a dream of his own to be interpreted. Let me read verses 1 through 3 here. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Now Daniel spoke and said, "In my vision, by night, I was looking, and behold, the four winds of the heavens were stirring upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, different from one another." So Daniel's dream's about animals, but it's related to Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You see, Nebuchadnezzar's dream is a view of empires more from an earthly perspective, when Daniel's is more of a perspective from God. Now, in verse 32, and chapter 2 of, is when Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that he was to be the head of gold, describing the first kingdom. In chapter 7 and in verse 4, Daniel describes the first kingdom when he says, "The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I watched until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on its feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Now, the lion certainly represents the Babylonian Empire. Powerful, very strong. At first it was strong like a lion, but then it became weak as a man. Now, I'm not going to don't have time to go back. You can go back to chapter 4, and you can read of the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the second beast, and his arms of silver, was the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, here, Daniel dreams describes this second beast in chapter 7 and verse 5 as this. "And behold, another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised itself up on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And this was said of it, 'Arise, eat up much flesh.'" Now, this bear represents the Medo-Persian Empire, and the fact that it was raised up on one side certainly indicates that the greater strength was of the Persians, the Persian strength of that empire. And the ribs would be probably the three chief Babylonian cities at the time. Now, the third description in chapter 2 says, "His belly and his thighs were of bronze," and that representing the Grecian Empire. Well, here's the way it's described in chapter 7 and verse 6. "And after this I saw, and lo, another beast, like a leopard, which had four wings of a bird on its back. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." The leopard here represents the Grecian Empire. If you study the history of Alexander the Great, he certainly conquered with lightning speed. You know, he was quite a military tactician. But in the end, his empire was split into four areas controlled by four generals. Now, all these events have taken place, but then there's a fourth beast that has partially been fulfilled, but much has yet to come in the last days. Now, the fourth beast represents the Roman Empire, and this is how it's described. You know, the legs of iron, feet were part of iron and part of clay. Then in chapter 7, it's described this way. "After this, I looked in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, frightening and terrifying and exceedingly strong, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the rest with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts before it, and it had 10 horns. Now, we know that the Roman Empire was the most powerful world-ruling empire up to that point. There was no doubt about it. It lasted a long time. And it's been resurrected numerous times. We've had minor resurrections of the Roman Empire. Now, the legs of iron were the Roman Empire, but the feet of iron and clay will be the final form of the Roman Empire. Now, John describes this beast in Revelation chapter 13. Let's turn there. Revelation 13. Here in Revelation 13, it says, "And I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and upon the heads was the name of blasphemy." So we're seeing a final resurrection of the Roman Empire having tremendous power from ten world leaders. Now, we're given more information about this coming world power in Revelation 17, if you want to turn over a few pages. Revelation 17, and beginning in verse 12, and it says, "And the ten horns that you saw are ten kings, ten world ruling leaders, who have not yet received the kingdom, but shall receive authority as kings for 1 hour with the beast. Now these all have one mind, and they shall all give their power and their authority to the beast." Now one final beast, think about it, with consolidated power under the head of one powerful individual. Influencing this great beast power is one individual with great power and with the ability to convince people to follow the beast. Yeah, kind of sounds like science fiction. Read some of this. But this is the Word of God. Notice back in Daniel 7 and verse 8. I should have told you to stay there in Daniel 7. But in Daniel 7 and in verse 8, it says, "As I was considering the horns, behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by their roots." And notice that this individual had great speaking abilities to persuade people to follow the beast. When it says, "And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." A lot more could be said about this beast power and this little horn. But I want to get into our world today, so I'm going to move on to Daniel 12 for just a minute. So a couple more pages over to Daniel 12. Now here in Daniel 12 and in verse 4, it says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the end of time." And you know, we in today's world have been given the knowledge to know some of the things that are ahead. Daniel did not have that. He was not given that ability to do that. Notice what it would be like in the end time as Daniel continues when he says, "Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." Are we in the end time? Everyone today is on the move. Just think about the average home. Look at the busy schedules that seem to dominate the families today. I know I've talked about it numerous times myself. Has there ever been a time of such speed and ease of travel? Ever? In almost every nation, we've witnessed crowded highways, thousands of people that are frequent flyers. Try to contrast our time of speed and travel with any other period in the history of the world. And in verse 4 of Daniel, it said knowledge would be increased. And our knowledge today is literally exploding. It's exploding. Look at the increase in the scientific knowledge, the medical knowledge, the technical knowledge. You know, almost everybody today has computers with its artificial knowledge of computer games and other things. But knowledge is exploding so rapidly that any computer, as great as they are, I remember getting the first computer I got was a Tandy 1000 while I was doing some coursework and postgraduate work at school. Boy, I tell you what, that was a toy compared to what's out here today. But knowledge is expanded so rapidly that any computer you have today is obsolete in about 3 to 4 years. Think about that. Knowledge will accelerate rapidly, but as I stated in the beginning, so will wickedness. Now, looking at the clock, I probably don't have time to turn there, but if you went to 2 Timothy 3, it describes the latter days. And I think if you would take time and you read through there, you would agree that these things are taking place in the world we live in today. But there's so much, that could be said in Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel as well as Revelation. But time obviously will not permit searching all those scriptures in this particular sermon. Now, this is why Each one of us. Each one of us needs to read and study all the time. So I'd like to take a few more minutes, and I'd like to turn to Matthew 24. And here in Matthew 24, Christ sums up. He sums up the end time, I think, pretty succinctly. In Matthew 24 and verse 3, now, his disciples came to him and they asked him, "Tell us, when shall these things be?" Do we all not want to know that? When shall these things be? "And what shall be the signs of your coming, the completion of the age?" Now, many people ask that question and they want an answer. And Christ gives an outline of the signs of his return and the end of the age. Do they describe our time? Begin in verse 6. Let's begin in verse 6. "And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you do not let these things disturb you, for it is necessary that all these things take place, but the end is not yet." So notice, please notice the term, "the end is not yet." I'm not trying to put times and dates on anything, I assure you. But in verse 7, it says, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places." Is that not taking place today? There's warfare throughout the entire world. Now, we've always had wars throughout history. Nobody would argue that. However, consider that in our time, warfare has become much more deadly. You know, I just came back from Panama City Beach, and whenever I'm in Panama City Beach, I'm close to Tyndall Air Force Base. And for those of you who've probably ever been down there, have you seen when these new jet fighters fly overhead? It's absolutely spectacular. It's amazing. I think back on my military career, and I tell you, I watched harpoon missiles being launched and other things on ships. And I tell you what, these modern fighting machines make some of the things I've worked with look like toys. It's amazing. It's pretty frightening, actually. It's awesome. Make no mistake, these weapons are deadly, and they have immense power to maim and to kill. That's what they're for. Now, several nations, including the United States of America, have intercontinental ballistic missiles with multiple warheads that reach across continents in minutes. Take one Trident submarine. I think they've got 16 missiles that can be fired off a Trident submarine and break into various different targets. Nuclear. It wouldn't take long if all these weapons were deployed to destroy humanity from the earth. We're not the only nation with these weapons. China, Soviet Union, Israel, France. I mean, we could go through a whole Pakistan, India. Politicians constantly talk about peace, constantly, and especially in the Middle East, as if it were achievable and it's just around the corner. Look, we're going to have a peace treaty with Iran here pretty soon. But look what Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians. Please turn to 1 Thessalonians. Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and in verse 1, he says, "Now then, concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, there is no need that I write to you, for you yourselves understand perfectly that the day of the Lord will come exactly as a thief comes at night. For when they say peace and security, then suddenly destruction will come upon them, as travail comes upon a woman who is with child, and they shall by no means escape." We know these things. You know, we have a lot of wars currently being played out in the world. But when we consider the shrinking of the United States from the world scene, the world has become a much more dangerous place with weapons that truly can destroy humanity. If you'll notice, Christ also mentioned famines, you know, in Matthew 24. And as I brought out earlier, look at the current situation along the West Coast. A lot of fires going on out there also, by the way, right now. Other places in the world are suffering similar or worse situations. Look at Pakistan right now. Look at the people dying from the heat, intense heat. Christ mentioned pestilences. And I brought this out earlier. Look at the situation of the birds and the bees and the dolphins dying in huge numbers. We're also starting to see an increase of disease that we don't even have cures for. We're also experiencing an increase in flooding and in tornadoes. And Christ mentioned earthquakes. You know, there were just, I think I even brought it up in a sermon a couple weeks ago, there were two major quakes recently in Nepal. They were pretty intense. And then four in the Solomon Islands. We had a 4.2 quake in the United Kingdom, a 6.8 quake recently in Japan. And add to that, San Francisco, Texas, Kansas, many others. Now, does it mean the end of the world today? No, but I think they're on the increase. They appear to be on the increase. But notice Christ, what he says in Matthew 24 and in verse 8. He says, now all these things are the beginning of sorrows. However, pay really particular close attention to verses 10 and 11. Where it says, and then shall many be led into sin, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Boy, sure sounds like a wonderful world to live in, and I think we're already seeing much of that take place in the world today. And verse 11, and many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. You know, we mentioned the little horn of Daniel, but there will be many false prophets, many. And if you don't think you can be deceived, drop down to verse 24. What does it tell you in verse 24? For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and they shall present great signs and wonders in order to deceive, if possible, even the elect. You know, we sit pretty comfortably. But could we be deceived? We need to constantly stay on guard because these prophets will have great persuasive powers and they will create a state of lawlessness. Do I need to even mention the Supreme Court recent ruling? Do not many teach today that the laws were nailed to the cross? Don't have laws anymore. What did it say in Deuteronomy 28? You'll keep all my laws, my statutes, my judgments. Look at some of the Protestant ministers today teaching a kind of universal love. I've got relatives, go to these churches, they're good people, I love them. But you know, many will teach these smooth things to make you feel good. I just happened to bring it up because somebody brought it up the other day, but look at Joel Osteen and his wife. Have you ever listened to them? Beautiful couple. Absolutely beautiful, attractive. They draw huge crowds. They make huge amounts of money. There's no doubt about it. But they do not teach God's commandments. They do not teach His statutes. They do not teach His laws. And what were we told that you must do if you're to receive blessings in Deuteronomy 28? And if you don't do those things, you will receive curses. And of course, most of all are still wrapped up in Sunday worship as if that came from God Himself. Brethren, we need to be on guard as things begin to escalate and heat up. There's no doubt about that. These false prophets will be given great powers to sway the world by Satan the devil. He's a spiritual being, much more powerful than we are. We need God's strength to avoid being drawn into this dangerous, deceptive world that is coming. If there was ever a time to study God's Word, to pray, and to meditate, and stay close to God, it is now. Now is today. In verse 36 of Matthew 24, we're told, but concerning that day and the hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. I don't want nobody should be setting times and dates, but can we agree that we're seeing signs of the latter days? Now drop down to verse 42. Here we're given the admonition, watch therefore because you do not know in what hour your Lord is coming. Are we prepared? Are we ready? Are we watching? Are we reading? Are we studying? Well, I'm going to tell you it's good advice, brethren, because there is a powerful being out there that he would like to take your crown. Don't let it happen.